Demigods appeal to the Lord. Text 32. Oh, do you have that? We've got sheets. Some of your sheets.
Ta-da! Tam Brahma Mahavibhuti Padamahiyam Swakritai Vayasya Chatur Vido Yatrahi Bhuta Sarga Savai Mahapurusha Atma Tantra. Rasidatam Brahma Mahavibhuti Padamahiyam Swakritai Vayasya Chatur Vido Yatrahi Bhuta Sarga Savai Mahapurusha Atma Tantra Rasidatam Brahma Mahavibhuti
Thank you.
passages. Lotus feet, Mahi, the earth, Iyam, this, Swakrita, created by himself, Eva, indeed, Yasya, of whom, Chaturvida, of four kinds of living entities. Yatra, wherein he indeed Bhutasarga, material creation. Sa, he Vai, indeed Mahapurusha, the Supreme Person, Atma Tantra, self-sufficient, Prasidata, may he be merciful to us. Brahma, the greatest, Mahadibhuti, with unlimited potency. Translation. On this earth, there are four kinds of living entities, who are all created by him. The material creation rests on his lotus feet. He is the great supreme person, full of opulence and power. May he be pleased with us. Let us Shishi Radharadna Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Ki. Let us repeat this responsibly, please. Just listen carefully and repeat after me. On this earth, there are four kinds of living entities who are all created by him. The material creation rests on his lotus feet. He is the great supreme person, full of opulence and power. May he be pleased with us. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The word Mahi refers to the five material elements: earth, water, air, fire, and sky, which rest upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahatpadam punya isho marare. The Mahatattva, the total material energy, rests on his lotus feet, For the cosmic manifestation is but another opulence of the Lord. In this cosmic manifestation, there are four kinds of living entities. Jirayuja, those born from embryos. Andaja, those born from eggs. Swedaja, those born from perspiration. And Udbijja, those born from seeds. Everything is generated from the Lord, as confirmed in the Vedanta Sutra, Janmadyasya Yataha. No one is independent, but the Supreme Soul is completely independent. Janmadyasya Yaton Vayad Itratas Charitesh Yabhigya Swarat. The word Swarat means independent. We are dependent, whereas the Supreme Lord is completely independent. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is the greatest of all. Even Lord Brahma, who created the cosmic manifestation, is but another opulence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The material creation is activated by the Lord, and therefore the Lord is not a part of the material creation. The Lord exists in his original spiritual position. The universal form of the Lord, Vairajamurti, is another feature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Padau mahiyam swakritai vyasya chaturvido yatra hi bhuta sarga savai maha purusha atma tantra prasidatam brahma maha vibhuti. On this earth there are four kinds of living entities who are all created by him. The material creation rests on his lotus feet. He is the great supreme person, full of opulence and power. May he be pleased with us.
Sri Guru Namaha. Sri Chidani Mano Vishnam Stattam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupika Dharmaya Tadati Swapanatika. Vanchikapatru Vyastagri Vasindhuvya Vichapati Tanam Bhavane Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
This chapter is entitled The Demigods Appeal to the Lord. I think actually the demigods appeal to the Lord for protection. And here the demigods are doing just that. In fact, specifically, Lord Brahma, who is the chief of the demigods, he is presenting these prayers, these appeals, for the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this particular verse, he is in the early stages, actually, of doing that. He is just setting the scene and preparing himself, preparing the general mood for some particular appeal that we require this, we require that, we are hoping for something from you. But he does not just say that please give us something just like that. He is not so brazen, really, just to confront the Lord and just like that say, give us this, give us that. No, very nicely he is preparing and creating the nice environment and mood
for some heartfelt appeal to the Lord for something, something which he wants. So there is that type of self-motivation behind it, but in a nice context, a nice Krishna-conscious context. So here, this is perhaps the third or fourth, anyway, it's one of the first, one of the earlier verses in which he is entering into this appeal. So, particularly here, he is praying, Prasidatam, that you please be pleased with us. We would like to please you, and we do not just want to be demanding or awkward or in that way, very overtly selfish, demanding like that. But actually we are devotees. We're devotees, and we appreciate you so much, so it's not really a matter of our selfishness, just absolutely that we want something. But it is all in the context of our appreciation of you and how we feel we have no other shelter. We're not going elsewhere. We have to go somewhere because sometimes situations get beyond us and we cannot just with our own strengths and own abilities. We cannot just deal successfully with everything. So we need some mercy. And we are appealing to you for that. Nobody else. And it's all in the context of our being your devotees. And wanting to please you. So therefore, Prasidatam. May you be pleased with us. And that would be very nice. We would feel satisfied if you would be pleased with us. So he's not just, as we said, just in that sort of demanding mood. You give us whatever we want, otherwise we will convert. Yes, Lord Brahma and company. We will convert and we will become Christians if you don't give us whatever we want. So you better give us. Otherwise, you'll be in trouble. Not really. No, his mood is very different. And even though this is the eighth canto, and here we are going into all sorts of very dramatic pastimes and war situations. Actually, we're going into this very. It's a very sort of vivid and very dramatic part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The churning of the milk ocean and the appearance of the pot of nectar and the dispute over that, and then fighting and winning and losing and fighting again and back and forth and very spectacular descriptions of the battles. So we're going into that. And the demigods, they know they need help. So they're appealing to the Supreme Lord, but they're appealing very nicely. We see that. Even Srila Prabhupada makes the point in the first canto, where there's the story of how, after the battle of Kurukshetra, then Ashvatthama, who was on the other side, opposed to Krishna and Arjuna and Yudhisthira, Ashvatthama, he's the son of Dronacharya, the great military teacher. So Ashvatthama, he, right in the last stages, he came and killed the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas. And his idea was that These people, the Pandavas, Arjuna and his brothers, with the help of Lord Krishna, it seems they're winning the battle, they're going to win. Seems like we're going to lose. And when they win, then their dynasty will gain control of this planet, and the future generations, they will rule, and their children will rule, and their children's children will rule. So, Ashwatthama was thinking that it looks like they're going to win and this is going to happen, but we will upset their plans and what appears to be now their victory and their bright future for the dynasty as the rulers and future rulers of this world. We will throw a spanner in the works. We will kill those children who would be the next generation of rulers. And then, well, what will they do? What will they do? So he didn't. He didn't. Even though it was against all the principles of Kshatriya conduct, warrior conduct in a battle situation. You don't fight. What to speak of only fighting with other warriors and not fighting with women and children and people who are just not equipped and not ready for such a situation. What to speak of only fighting with qualified warriors? But you only fight with them when they're ready. In other words, you don't sneak up on them when they've got their backs turned, or somehow or other they're disadvantaged. Maybe their weapons are broken, but you have all your weapons. So you don't just jump in and take the advantage and just do away with them like that. No, it's very principled. Everything in Vedic culture is very principled. Everything in Krishna consciousness is very principled. Of course, there are always personal considerations in so many ways, but it is not just an ocean of personal considerations which somehow or other have to be worked out in and of themselves. Everything is based on principles. So even this fighting, warrior conduct, is based on principles. So this Ashwatthama, what he did was, at night, he sneaked in to the Pandavas' army compound and located the tent where those five little children were sleeping, and he came in and he cut off their heads and took their heads away and presented them to Duryodhana, who was the leader of that other side, thinking that he would be pleased that, you know, I have undermined now the plans of the Pandavas for ruling the world and having their rule carry on through the generations. I foiled their plan by killing their children, so who's going to rule after them? It's going to be a very... it's not going to be such a simple situation for them. So he didn't. He didn't. And in the morning the Pandavas woke up and they saw this ghastly, shocking sight of their little children dead, with their heads cut off. All five of them. So naturally, there is big disturbance created. However, that same Ashwatthama, he didn't want to just stop at that. He knew that there is another descendant. These five were children, directly, of the five Pandavas, one from each. But there was also a grandchild already, Arjuna already had a grandchild, at least on the way, coming, his daughter-in-law was pregnant, so Anyway, there was one descendant coming, and this was so Ashvatthama, he decided, let me kill this child too within the womb of the mother. So Ashvatthama, then he came and he dispatched one Brahmastra weapon, very, very, very powerful, like a nuclear weapon type of thing. It was powerful on that scale, but also controllable to the point that, like in this case, it could actually kill a child within the womb without harming the mother at all. Very amazing. But if delivered and empowered in another way, it could practically destroy the whole planet. It was really a very extraordinary weapon. So he fired that, or released that, at this child who was within the womb of Uttara, who was the wife of Abhimanyu, who had been killed in the battle already, but who was the son of Arjuna. And that child within the womb was Parikshit, who, as time went on, he became the speaker, or rather the hearer of Srimad Bhagavatam. So then Ashvatthama, he released that weapon, and the Pandavas, Arjuna and his brothers, they saw, here comes this weapon. And Uttara herself, somehow she could tell, this weapon is aimed at me. Or even more particularly, she could tell, this weapon is aimed at the child within my womb. So she then appealed to Krishna. Just like here, Lord Brahma is appealing to Krishna. So Uttara came there in the first canto and appealed to Lord Krishna that here comes this very powerful, effulgent weapon heading. It's already released. It's on its way. It's flying towards me. And I know it's going to, intended to, kill the child within my womb. So you please stop that. Similar situation. But it is not, just like here we're mentioning with Lord Brahma, how nicely he is appealing to the Lord. Not just gross, not just throwing his hands in the air and just calling out, help, save me. But very nicely presenting his appeal. So even though in that case with Uttara, it was such a deadly situation with this terrible weapon flying on its way to kill the child within her womb, but she, when she approached Krishna and appealed to Krishna for protection, just like Lord Brahma is doing, then she also just began very nicely. She glorified Krishna, just like Lord Brahma is here, and in the previous verses, he is glorifying the Lord that you are so great, you are so wonderful, you are so kind. People who are on the material platform cannot understand you, and so on and so forth. These different characteristics and glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Uttara, she also glorified Krishna like that. And then she said, there is this fiery weapon released by the son of Drona. It's coming to kill the child within my womb. You please protect me. So Krishna did. And Srila Prabhupada, he notes there in one of those purports this point that she did not just get into some flap, some emotional condition and start screaming or something or running or whatever like that. She approached the Lord and prayed to the Lord, but in a very nice way. in a very nice way, not just expressing some selfish concern. So here, Prasidatam Brahma Maha Vibhuti. May you be pleased with us, the demigods. And who are you? You are Brahma, not Brahma, which means Lord Brahma, but Brahma. You are Brahma. You are the greatest. You are the greatest. All different types of living entities, all of them, not just some of them, some family, but all the living entities, they come from you. Whatever family they're in, whatever species and the concomitant mode of reproduction that they go through in the process of their taking birth. But you are the original source of their birth. And Maha Vibhuti, you have unlimited potency. The whole creation rests on you. It's all dependent on you, but it rests on your feet. In other words, right at the bottom of you. It is not resting on your head as if it is something greater than you, perhaps, or something of that sort. But it is just, it's residing on your feet. It's in this lowly position in relation to you. So, Prasidatam Brahma. We are praying to you, and you please be merciful to us, because you're the greatest. And if anyone can be merciful, it's you. And your mercy, it is the greatest mercy, just as you're the greatest in other respects, in all respects, you're the greatest. So your mercy is the greatest, and you please exhibit that mercy with us. This is very nice. Oftentimes I wonder when I read these prayers, how do these devotees think of these nice examples, all these nice points, particularly in situations like this or with Uttara, as we mentioned in the first canto, where they're under great pressure and there's danger. Who knows what's going to happen? They could lose their lives just in a moment or in a very short time. But how is it that they think of all these nice examples and nice characteristics of the Lord and how he does this and does that and is like this and like that and present it all very poetically and very beautifully, actually, where when there's death just bearing down on them, by material standards, it seems inevitable. But still, so nicely, they're presenting themselves and appealing to the Lord with great feeling and very appropriately. Well, that is because they are great devotees. And they're not just ordinary material people like here. Lord Brahma mentions these four types of living entities. Who appear within the material world. There are only four types, actually. Those Jirayuja, born from embryos, born from wombs, in other ways, that's us. Then Andaja, born from eggs, like chickens and so on. Svedaja, born from perspiration. What does that mean? That you perspire and somehow your bodily excrements just turn into living entities. Oh, if your perspiration does that, then what about you? You must be very special. But no, it's just a medium. It's just a medium. Yes, it's a sort of indirect medium, actually, that the living entities somehow are placed into that perspiration. And it is not that they actually are born from the perspiration as such, or udbija, those who appear from seeds, like the plants and so on. Yes, so this is all the living entities then. They're all appearing in one of these four manners. All of these living entities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so great that he is responsible for all of things. He's the greatest. They're all appearing from him. We cannot produce living entities from our perspiration. We cannot produce eggs or, what is it? Seeds. Only in one way, through the embryo, that particular system, can we produce offspring. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so great, he can produce all four types of living entities. And not only can he produce a few of each type, but he produces all of them. So how great is he? He's very great. He is the greatest, actually. There's a nice description in Nectar of Devotion, how in Dwarka, when Lord Krishna was here 5,000 years ago, the demigods would come. Krishna was there. So naturally, the demigods, they would come every day. This was the thing. You wake up in the morning, you go and see Krishna. That's all. That was the program. Every day, they would roll up at some point in the morning, and they would be there. We want to see Krishna. So, there's a very nice description given in Nectar of Persian of how Krishna's doorman, like his secretary, dealing with visitors, making up his appointment book and, you know, managing all the visitors, so that Krishna didn't just get bothered by anybody and everybody, or at times that were not suitable. So there's a very nice description how the demigods are there in the waiting room. They're waiting to see Krishna. And there's so many of them. And they all want to see Krishna. They're so enthusiastic, of course. They want to see Krishna now. But the dwarf keeper, that secretary, being a very good secretary and appointment maker and manager of visitors, he, of course, didn't want Krishna to just be flooded by all these enthusiastic demigods. So he was managing them. And he was telling them, he said, Lord Brahma, stop offering prayers from your four mouths. And Lord Shiva, just stop walking up and down, chanting. And Lord Indra, you stop crying from your thousand eyes. You stop it. Lord Krishna is very busy today. I don't know if he'll be able to see you. So you just calm down and relax. Yes, so Krishna is so great that even Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the greatest demigods, Lord Indra, the king of the administrative demigods, these greatest personalities in the world, in the universe, who are far beyond all of us put together, that even then, They can't just come in and say, here I am, I'm Lord Brahma, and I am seeing Krishna, and expect to just, the door will fly open for them. No. No. Even, there's the description of Mahavishnu at the end of the 10th canto. Lord Mahavishnu, he's even greater than Brahma and Shiva. He's the greatest of the managers of the universe, of the whole material creation for that matter. So, Mahavishnu, he wanted to see Krishna. So I don't know what happened when he went and met that secretary, you know, that one who was telling everyone to keep cool and, you know, they couldn't expect just to see Krishna today. Maybe he got turned away or something, or whatever. But Mahavishnu, there at the end of the 10th canto, it's described how he wanted to see Krishna. And he was coming to Dwarka regularly. But somehow, it doesn't describe exactly how, he was not able to see Krishna. But he really wanted to see Krishna. So what he did, he applied a very remarkable strategy to somehow or other make some arrangement so he could see Krishna. So he did a very extraordinary thing, actually. He kidnapped one devotee Brahmin family's child. Just when the child was born, just came out of the womb, minutes later or something like that, he was gone. He was just not there. Kidnapped, just like that. So we can imagine how the parents felt. Suddenly the child vanishes into thin air. So then they decided to have a second child. The same thing happened. Mahavishnu again. Third child, fourth, fifth. A whole sequence of several children. Every one of them vanished into thin air, or Mahavishnu's somehow, because he's very clever and powerful. He somehow just stole them. Somehow, they vanished. So they were devotees and Brahmins living in Dwarka. So naturally, they turned to Krishna. And naturally, it's a bit of a long story, we won't go into all the details. Naturally, Krishna responded and went to recover their children. And he did. And when he was there with Mahavishnu, then he asked Mahavishnu, do you have these children? Mahavishnu just said, yes. Krishna asked, can I have them back? Mahavishnu just said, yes, no problem. Just take them. And there they were. And he said, you know, the reason I did this was because I wanted to see you with Arjuna. Arjuna came also. And I knew if I did it in this way, then it would eventually come to this point. As we said, it was a bit of a long story. I knew it would come to this point that in order to protect your devotees and help the Brahmins, that you would come yourself, and then I would see you. So, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments there, and Srila Prabhupada refers to this at some length in the Krishna books, how Mahavishnu was forced to do this, to see Krishna. He couldn't just walk in and say, I'm Mahavishnu, to that secretary. You just step back, and I'm just going to go in and see Krishna. No. It was not easy. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains, Krishna is so great, he's so much greater, that even Mahavishnu, in order to get to see Krishna, had to go through some major rigmarole before he finally got to see Krishna. So Krishna's the greatest. He's the greatest person. And, of course, there are many other stories. Lord Brahma. How Lord Brahma stole the cowherd boys and cows. How Lord Brahma came that one time wanting to see Krishna, and he met perhaps that same secretary at the door and said, "I've come to see Krishna." The secretary said, "Well, who can I tell Krishna has come?" And Lord Brahma said, "Well, tell him that Brahma has come." The secretary went in and came back shortly and said, "Krishna would like to know which Lord Brahma." And Lord Brahma was a little taken aback. Somehow he didn't know there are other Brahmas in other universes. So he responded in that little perplexed way, that, what do you mean? Which Lord Brahma? I am the Lord Brahma, of course. You know, the four-headed Lord Brahma. So the secretary went back and told Krishna that it's the four-headed Lord Brahma. And Krishna then saw him. And Lord Brahma asked, "Well, what do you mean? I don't understand. You asked, which Lord Brahma? You mean there are other Lord Brahmas?" And then Krishna called for so many Lord Brahmas. And then our four-headed Lord Brahma, he saw that there were many others. Some, what to speak of four heads, some had 10, 100 even. Some even had 1,000 heads. Just like, you know, a whole pile of heads. And some had 1,000,000 heads. Some had 1,000,000,000 heads. Some had 1,000,000,000,000 heads. And some had tens of trillions of heads. That must be quite something to see, what to speak of have. Because our four-headed Lord Brahma, he was totally astonished, just to the point of being completely flabbergasted, because the number of heads indicates brain power and capability and like that. And the number of heads that the Brahma has is determined by the size of universe he's going to manage. The bigger the universe, the more brain power, and therefore the more heads. So our universe then, with the four-headed Lord Brahma in charge, actually it's the smallest. Yeah. Our big universe, we think it's, you know, some people think it's just so vast. Some people think it's unlimited. It's, at least by our standards, it's very, very big. But by Krishna's standards, it's the smallest of all of them. So who is this Krishna? Who is this Krishna? He is really just in another dimension of size, of everything, altogether beyond us. So Lord Brahma then, as a devotee, and as a very big person in his own right, particularly by our standards, very, very big person, he's praying to Krishna. He's in the process of appealing to Krishna. But when he does so, he's doing it in this very nice way, very wonderful way, not just coming and shouting out, "Give me this, give me that." Not like that at all. It is like a devotional principle, actually. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna makes that point. Chaturvedavajante mam janasukritnorjana arta jigyasa artarati gyanicha bharatashava. That, in the very beginning stages at least, four types of people may approach me and take some sort of shelter of me, at least in an initial sense. And the first is the distressed. It is not uncommon that distressed people, at least if they are a little pious, then they will take shelter of the Lord to deal with their distress. They'll pray to God. At least if they're a little pious. If they're not so pious, they'll turn to something else. Turn to some intoxication, just lose control and go mad or something. But if they're a little pious, they may approach Krishna. Of course, Lord Brahma, it is not that he's just a little pious and somehow he's turning to Krishna. He's a very great devotee and he's turning to Krishna. So, the devotees, they know, if I'm going to pray to someone, if I need help from someone, let it be Krishna. It will be Krishna. I will pray to Krishna. So therefore we find in Srimad Bhagavatam, in so many places, great devotees are appealing to Krishna. So we should also pray to Krishna when we're in some situation where we need that sort of help, higher help, and it is beyond us. We should also pray to Krishna. Of course, we should be a little careful what we pray to Krishna for. We don't want to just be praying to Krishna. We're meant to be devotees. We're meant to be serving him. We're meant to be trying to get free from the material nature. So we don't want to get into some habit of praying to Krishna for anything and everything. Just some material things. No. But when there's some very important situation connected with our devotional service, then we can, we should pray to Krishna. But if it's just, you know, oh look, she has a nice new sari, so I'll pray to Krishna, you please give me a nicer sari, or something, whatever. Let me get a nicer motor car to impress my proposed devotee fiancé, so she'll think I'm cool. Not like that. But here, it's an important situation. The demigods are under attack. They're under attack from the demons. The whole arrangement of the Lord for managing the universe, it may be turned upside down. Yes, so it's actually some situation where there are real Krishna conscious concerns involved. So, when it goes beyond you, and there is some important considerations to do with Krishna consciousness involved, then of course we must appeal to Krishna to help like that. This is one of the 9 processes of devotional service. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnas, Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanam, Vedanam. 9 processes of devotional service. And one of them is Vandanam, offering prayers. Of course, that offering prayers does not always mean that we need some help in this way or that. One can offer prayers simply to glorify. That's very nice. That is better, really. But sometimes one may, as a devotee, in terms of Krishna consciousness and situations in Krishna consciousness, one may appeal to the Lord for help, for mercy. Proceed at him. You please be merciful to us. But when we do that, we should try to learn from these great persons like Lord Brahma here and Uttara, in the first canto, and so on, there are a number of instances. We should try to learn how to do these things nicely, not just in some emotional sort of disturbed state, just calling out for help. Even if that happens, we should still take shelter of Krishna, but we should try to do it nicely, following in the footsteps of these great devotees. Any comments or questions? Oh, there's a microphone, just a second. Said when you think on a rational level or realistic level, then such and such like that. I would say that's not entirely, real or, not entirely as sort of pragmatic a view as you might or many people might think it is. It is a fact the world is deteriorating in certain ways, but there's also improvement in certain ways. In other words, we would say that the change is occurring, but it's not just across the board that everything just changes, but, it's step by step. So, just as an example, so many people have become, and are continuing to become more and more, become vegetarian, become interested in spiritual life in different forms, directly and indirectly. There's been the collapse, for example, of communism, at least to quite a large extent. So changes have taken place for the better. So we would say that this is all part of that, what you're referring to, the improvement, either directly or it may well be indirectly, but through the influence of Krishna consciousness, the spreading of Krishna consciousness. I remember being, when I was a child, and my mother, some new people moved in a few doors away, and my mother came and told me that they're vegetarians, these new people. And she told me that, the way she told me was, these weird people have moved in, these vegetarians, watch out, who knows, It was like that in a pretty much very Western country. But now, in America, at least 10 or 11, 12% of the whole population is vegetarian. In Europe, it's increasing steadily and rapidly, actually. Yeah. Of course, in other respects, things are deteriorating. But what can you expect? It's Kali Yuga. Rome was not built in a day, that sort of idea. It takes time, it's not easy. But if we keep working at it, just look here in Durban. If you go back 30 years, how many devotees were there? I mean, real devotees. Not just, with all due respect, Hindu people who may like Krishna to some degree or in some way, but actual devotees who have actually already changed their lives and are continuing to progress. So how many were there? compared to today. The change in terms of percentage is from, you know, maybe zero or maybe a handful, say, to thousands and thousands. So the percentage change has probably been, you know, many hundreds of percent improvement, or even perhaps thousands of percent improvement. So it's like that. As we said, not across the board.